40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Officers in Portage County responded to a strange call last night for help. The caller said they hit something in the road. When they got out to look, they found a bobcat stuck in the grill of the car. Officers called in a conservation warden who was able to pull the large bobcat out and get it into the back of a pickup truck. The animal was taken to the area where it was struck and released back into the wild. The statewide tornado drill scheduled for today has been postponed. Storms are expected today. The National Weather Service may need to issue actual warnings, so the test has been pushed to Friday with the same schedule of 1:45 and 6:45 p.m. However, if the weather is bad again tomorrow, the test will be canceled until next year. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Embroidery Professionals Plus, how can I help you?
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about your web stores. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Absolutely. We work with you to pick the products and personalize your page, then provide you the link so you can promote your store.
Wow, that sounds so easy.
To get started, email your design.
Embroidery Professionals Plus has custom apparel specialists ready to create a web store for you. Two Wisconsin locations in Deerfield and Eden. Embroidery Professionals Plus, apparel you love, service you crave. Oh, and home of the Wisconsin tailgate hoodie.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
And never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, as you know, I was in D.C. for a Patriotic Millionaires event talking about, hey, how do we bring more revenue into our government to fund the things that we need? You know, like infrastructure, education, healthcare, you know, pay our bills, maybe not have the hostage situation that's currently going on. How do we bring in some additional revenue to do the things that we need to do? And a group of millionaires came together and said, hey, the answer is what I've been saying for all 18 years on this show: tax the very wealthy at a much higher rate. Dig up the remains of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and return to that tax code. I'll here to share some thoughts on Monday's event and also Tuesday's press conference. Obviously, tax day. I've asked Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be in your show, Rick. Thank you.
So appreciate the invitation. Had a great time talking to people about taxes. Not really the sexiest of topics, but when you start getting into the organizing that you guys are doing around, hey, how about we tax the rich? I think it's exciting stuff.
Hey, it worked well. We got, you know, we've been doing it for years too, saying tax the rich. That's the title of the book. But we had a conference. We had speaker after speaker explaining how the rich people are just getting away with murder, paying far lower tax rates than people who work for a living like you and your listeners, Rick. And we have to change the rules to charge them more taxes. We had our speakers. We had a cocktail party. We had Congress people lining up and waiting in line to talk to us. And I think that we are moving the window. We really are.
And for me, Morris, this shouldn't be a partisan issue. I mean, this is one of those things where you're talking about raising taxes on the people who are in the rarefied air of, you know, the top 1%, maybe even the top 1% of 1%. We're not talking about the person pushing the broom in the street or driving a truck or swinging a hammer, because they already pay a higher tax rate than most of those folks. We're talking about going back to a time where the bigger your shoulders, the more we expect from you.
But it is a partisan issue, and it's just sad. These Republicans come with all kinds of crazy excuses. And I went on Fox News, you know, 2 days ago, because I want to get, you know, more than just your listeners, but their listeners too.
Sure.
So I go on Fox News, and the guy, Neil Cavuto, he says, but Morris, but we see the government just not getting the job done. We shouldn't send them more money. And I say, look, if you think there's crime in your neighborhood because you don't have the police doing enough, you don't say, I want fewer police. You say, I want more police. We have a lot of problems in this country, including a lot of people who aren't able to get by, who aren't able to feed their kids properly, who don't have daycare for their children so they can go to work. And that doesn't mean you send them less money. That means they need more resources. And we have to have our governments, federal, state, and local, have the resources they need so that our people can afford to meet their basic needs. It's that simple, Rick.
Yeah, and this has been going on since the Reagan era. Yeah. The sad reality is there's been a massive redistribution of wealth from people who work for a living to people who don't. And then look, you know, the reality is, and you say it all the time, the hardest day's work you do is watching the screen go by. Well, there are people out there who are working their behind off and not and still falling behind. And there's something wrong with that.
We got a chart from the Fed, Rick. They go back like to World War II about how much income goes to labor in the total country. And it was like 49%, 51%, 51%, 49% for years and years until the late 70s. Now it's fallen to like 44% for labor. And labor that used to get half the total income of the country now only gets 44% as opposed to 56% for not labor. And it's just, that's a huge difference. Over since the Reagan Revolution till now, there's been this huge transfer of income from people that actually work for a living to people who don't. And that's what's caused the problem in our country. That's why the rich are getting richer and richer and richer. And so many people don't have enough money to get by.
Yeah,
and we have to do something about it.
No, I watched an interview with Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota and wrestler and you know, Navy SEAL and all of this. And he said, look, in this country, we shouldn't have any billionaires whatsoever because there's no way you can convince me that someone works that hard. And I don't disagree with that.
Well, no one works that hard. No one is a billionaire from working hard. I can assure you. I mean, maybe I'd make an exception for J.K. Rowling, but no one is a billionaire because of hard work. People are billionaires because they own things that are worth billions of dollars. You know, Mark Zuckerberg owns a big part of Facebook, the company that runs Facebook, Meta. Jeff Bezos owns a big part of Amazon.com. Neither of them are billionaires because they work so hard. They're billionaires because they're the ones who owned it to begin with, and they never sold the whole thing. So yeah, we have some extraordinarily wealthy people in our nation. They've gained extraordinary wealth from their companies that they own, and they've never paid a penny of taxes on that extraordinary wealth they've generated from the companies they've owned, because that doesn't count as income.
Right.
Income
is
your...
One of the things that you have in your report is you want to change what money is. You say money is money is money. It shouldn't matter if you earned it by going to work. You got it through investments. You won it in a lottery. It fell from like manna from heaven. Income is income. Is that right?
Yeah, we want to tax for up to $1 million, we're okay with the way it is. But if you're getting over $1 million a year, we want you to pay tax on all the money you make, including inheritances and stock market profits and unrealized capital gains and partnership income and whatever you get in money. If it's over $1 million, when it's over $1 million, you should pay taxes on it. That's what we think.
Now, the rates that you laid out, and I don't believe this is going to happen, not in my lifetime, but I it's a good goal. From $5 to $10 million, a 50% tax rate on that dollar over 10 to 25, 60%, 25 to 50, 70%, all the way up to over $100 million at 90% for that dollar over. This isn't, as I said, unprecedented. This is kind of, you know, somewhat going back to the Eisenhower era, even though during the Eisenhower era, it would have been like $2 million for the 90% range. You go up to $100 million. What do you think most people are going to say when they see that?
I think... Well, some people are going to say it's crazy. Some people are going to say it's great. Some people are going to complain a lot. And the biggest complainer, you know, Ken Langone, he, you know, made a huge fortune, had his name put on a hospital that he funded downtown. He paid 70% income tax rate on the money he made when he founded Home Depot and, you know, made billions of dollars, Matt, over the time. And he lived in the highest tax place in the world, Manhattan in New York City, never moved, never did anything, and became a billionaire based on that. And now he's out complaining that tax rates are so high and people won't innovate and start companies anymore. And I think that's just ridiculous.
No, it is. But yeah, when I saw that, I said, you know what? I got to tell you, I think I would love to pay the 90% tax rate. I think I would. Why? Because I'd have $100 freaking million.
Yeah, and you'd be willing to pay 90% of your 101st million.
Exactly.
after you made the first $100 million at lower tax rates.
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, I go back to Mitt Romney's statement, you know, 47% of the people don't pay federal taxes. And my response to that was, there are 47% of the people out there who would love to pay federal taxes because they would make more money. And how come we look at things in the weirdest ways in this country? I guess we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs. Whenever we hear about taxes, we foam. Because I've had those conversations going, well, you're going to tax me at 90%? No, not you.
And not anybody, 90% of their income, 90% of their 101st million? Yeah, that's fine. Because not too many people make 101st million at all. And if they do, they've paid far lower rates than the first 100 millions. It's just, well, yeah, not everyone understands about marginal rates and average rates. But it's just ridiculous. I mean, we had a guy, you know, some crazy heckler come up to us when he was giving a speech in the East Lawn of the Capitol Tuesday. You know, complain, oh, will you sign this pledge of 90% of your money to the government? And I mean, I'll tell you, Rick, I don't particularly like paying taxes.
No one does.
I don't particularly like paying for my apartment either. I don't particularly like paying dues for the club that I'm in where I exercise. But I do all those things because I want things. And I pay taxes because that's part of the rules. And I might, you know, want to have the club raise the dues so they have money to, I don't know, refurbish the dining room or something. But it doesn't mean that I want to pay for it all myself either.
Yeah, or hire someone to clean the showers so you don't get foot fungus.
That's right.
There's always that. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're at Morris Pearl. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. If you want to take a look at the work that they do, patrioticmillionaires.org. There were two other components to your tax plan that I found interesting. One of them I've been advocating, well, all of these I've been advocating for years, but this one in particular, the idea of having the standard deduction at what a true cost of living would be. And I think you pegged the number at $36,000 for a single person and $56,000 for a couple, a married couple. This, I think, is really important. And going, look, you know, it costs a certain amount of money just to basically live, and then we should be taxing you above that, and that rate should be going up the larger your income is. I think having a conversation along those lines is something that could be productive, and I know you guys are doing some of this. I want to get your thoughts, though.
Yeah, we actually want to get a tax cut for people whose annual income is below about $36,000 a year. They should not pay tax at all, because that's about, I mean, you can't really live well in less than, we figured, $36,000 a year. I've never tried it. I wouldn't know, but I doubt that most people can. So we think there should be a zero. Just like if you get all of your income from long-term capital gains, you have a zero bracket that goes to almost $100,000 right now. So we think people who work for a living should have a zero bracket up to a living wage, which is currently about $36,000 a year, according to the experts that we found.
But what about skin in the game? What about skin in the game, Morris?
Well, these guys don't have any extra skin. They're living on the edge as it is, paycheck to paycheck. I don't think they would do any differently with any better with skin in the game. I think what I'd like to have them do is have enough money to maybe pay for daycare for their kids so they can all work. Enough money to buy food and make the rent every month. And maybe have an iPhone so they can sign up for an app to get extra money, I don't know, door dashing or something. It's very expensive to be poor.
Oh, and I know. I've been there. The other thing that you talk about in your report is as a wealth tax. And I thought this was creative. You came out and said that you're like 1,000 times the median wealth. This is a wealth tax, not an income tax. Would be at like 2% all the way up to someone who's a million times the median income. And I'm going, who is possibly a million times the median income? And is that good for society to have someone with a million times the median income in this country?
Median wealth. I mean, we think that the median wealth, meaning half the people have less wealth than this, is about $160,000. So half the people in this country have more than $160,000 in wealth. And one of them has more than $160 billion in wealth. I mean, I believe that one is Mr. Musk, who owns like Tesla and some stuff.
Yeah, I don't know about that after today, after both the bird died and the rocket crashed.
Oh,
Or I'm sorry, didn't crash, didn't explode. It unexpectedly dismantled.
Unexpectedly dismantled, yeah. Well, whatever. But yeah, we think that if the median family is 160,000 in wealth, if you have 160 million, you can pay 2% of that. We think you can do that. And you'd still have $157 million in wealth. And most people can live and provide for their children, their grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren with $157 million. So we don't see that as a major problem for even the richest people. And yeah, if you're the richest person in the world, you can pay 8% of your wealth to the government. And you'll still be the richest person in the world. And then if people pay these taxes, then the median will go down and they'll have less to pay next time. And the wealth of the median will get closer, they'll get closer.
Right.
So the inequality will go down is what I meant to say. And over time, it'll take a very long time, but over time, we'll have a little bit less inequality in our country. The very rich will have a little bit less, and the people at the bottom will have a bit more. And that will be good. I want to live in a country filled with people that can afford to buy stuff. And that can help me get rich.
Yeah. So the last question I've got for you, because, you know, this all is great. Like I said, I've been advocating for these policies for years. The right has done a masterful job of saying government can't do anything. And when they're in charge, they end up proving it. We hear all the time that government is nothing but waste, fraud, and abuse. So just giving them more money, throwing more money at the problem, Morris, isn't going to solve it. How do you undo, you know, 40 years of right-wing propaganda on getting people to hate their government?
I mean, we talk to them one at a time. Just the same way, you know, we met with you in person last week in Washington, D.C. And what I tell people, like, who have that argument is look at the parts of government that you actually see with your own eyes. If you have crime in your neighborhood and the police aren't doing enough, do you stand up saying, I want fewer police? No. If you have crime in your neighborhood because the police aren't doing enough, you say, I want more police. In the same way, we need more government to solve some of these problems, not less government. Government gets more stuff done when they have more people and more resources. And that's what we are trying to do, is we want to provide resources for those people who need those things, whether it's police or it's hospitals or there's fire departments or there's schools and universities and all the things that government does for us. We think we need a little bit more of those things, not less of those things.
Well, we got a lot of work to do, and I hope folks will go to patrioticmillionaires.org, check out the website there, maybe get involved, because I know you guys are going to be doing a bunch of organizing here in the coming weeks and months, and I look forward to hearing all about it.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Great to be in your show.
Appreciate
See you again,
it.
Sir.
Good stuff. Morris Pearl, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. You got thoughts, questions, comments? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I think one of the most ridiculous stories of the day. Texas, guns, yep, again. Now, you had a guy who was at the Capitol riot, at the insurrection. He was initially charged with four misdemeanors. tied to the insurrection. Things like trespassing, things like, simple misdemeanor stuff that other people have gotten, and slap on the wrist, a little, hey, don't do it again kind of thing. Turns out that this guy's father said, hey, maybe you might want to go check on him. Kind of wondering, what's going on. Well, evidently, he decided to, this is just one of those things. As the deputies were coming to check on him, now to make sure that he's okay, that he's going to show up to his court date, which is coming up, he decided to shoot at the deputies. So now, not only is he facing the four misdemeanor charges for his part in the insurrection, evidently he fired at the law enforcement officers, which means that he's now being charged with a felony. Felony possession of a firearm, and now he's probably going to get jail time. And you just go, what are people thinking? I know. Guns don't shoot people. I get it. Also, Marco Rubio had a video today that caught my attention, complaining about there being no gas in South Florida. He said 4 days, and they still can't figure out how to get enough gas to South Florida, hashtag gas shortage. And he threw up they. I don't know who they is. He's the government. He's a U.S. senator. He could do something, but he chooses to go they. They. I'm still wondering who they are. Is it Biden? Which I guess you're supposed to believe that it's Biden and it's them. Or is it the they, ExxonMobil? Shell, BP, the oil, is it them? Now, understand, they had a little flood, because, you didn't hear anything about this. Not much. Had a little flood. Hard to get around. Airport was shut down for a while. You also have people who are freaking out. So you've got to run on the gas that's there. So, when people panic, shortages happen. And when your roads are underwater, hard for trucks to get through them. Unless you're going to start sending in barges and boats, I guess. And there's part of me that goes, maybe that's the future here. Maybe the future is, gas delivery boats. But then hold on, wait a second. If you had a gas delivery boat delivered gas to the gas station in the boat, how would the cars get there? Never mind. That was a bad idea. But see, this is what I'm talking about. I need to know who they are so they can tell me. They can tell me just what's going on. I mean, really, just thanks, Marco. Just crazy. Also, I got to get the Joe Manchin story in. Again, another Joe Manchin story. And look, here's the thing. I've met Joe Manchin. I like him. He seems like a decent guy to talk to. A terrible legislator, but probably the best a Democrat is ever going to get out of West Virginia. He's now going after Biden over the debt ceiling stuff. And I'm going, at some point, don't we just stop? I talked to people on the street, and I had a couple of these conversations today about, what would you do? If you were in charge, what would you do? And of the three conversations I had, two don't even know why we have a debt ceiling. It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless other than in these moments to hold us hostage. The other person was like, well, this is an opportunity for Republicans to strong arm the Democrats. And he's right. That's what they use it for. So I'm looking at this and I'm going, you've got Manchin who's look, if you're against it, then shut up. And that's where my mind goes. Stop already. Stop being the fly in every bit of ointment. And I think there's a part of me that goes, I think he just has an attention problem. He wants attention. Maybe he wasn't loved as a child. I don't know. But this is crazy. I'll let the administration move on how they're going to move. And I like what Biden's been doing so far. Treat them as the kooks that they are and say, look, you can't hold us hostage in this moment. I'm not going to let you. And as our friend Bob Ney said yesterday, if McCarthy forces a shutdown, because he's not getting enough pounds of flesh. 22% cut to the VA. I think Bob's right. I think the reality is, I think Republicans will pay another price for it. But the sad reality is, for them anyway, is crazy's taking over. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at theRickSmithShow.com. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1853. That was the day that Harriet Tubman led her first trip on the Underground Railroad, the clandestine network that helped enslaved people escape slavery and move north to freedom. One of the most remembered conductors on the railroad, Tubman herself escaped slavery in eastern Maryland. Tubman had been forced to work in the fields, performing back-breaking labor under a brutal overseer. As a girl, Tubman was injured when she was hit in the head by a weight thrown by an overseer. The injury plagued her with headaches and visions that Tubman attributed as signs from God. To escape these harsh conditions, Tubman had to leave her family behind. But she did not forget them. On her first trip to free those enslaved, the group included her sister and two children. On subsequent trips, she helped lead her brother and aged parents to freedom. In all, Tubman made 19 trips back to the South. She became known as Moses, leading her people out of bondage. These journeys came at a personal risk for Tubman. Enraged Southerners placed a $40,000 bounty on her head. But Tubman was known to say that she never lost a single passenger. The Civil War did not stop Tubman's bravery. She worked as a cook, a nurse, and even a spy for the Union Army. The renowned abolitionist Frederick Douglass wrote a letter for Tubman where he wrote, quote, "The midnight sky and the silent stars have been the witnesses of your devotion to freedom and of your heroism. The horrors of the slave labor system ended in the United States because of the courage of those like Harriet Tubman who risked their lives to stand up against injustice." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Way to go, Wisconsin! In a momentous progressive win, voters there elected County Judge Janet Protasiewicz to their state Supreme Court. She thumped a mega-maga Republican by 11 points in a pivotal race, ending a dark decade of unbridled right-wing partisan extremism by that court's GOP majority. But the vote has profound implications, reaching far beyond the Badger State. Its deeper meaning was brought home to me on Election Eve when the Republican candidate, a Trump-hugging, gerrymandering, anti-choice lawyer, complained that, quote, "doing a statewide campaign is kind of hard." Well, yes, but to paraphrase a song by a band called the Austin Lounge Lizards, campaigning is hard, but it's harder when you're stupid. Not that the lawyer lacked intellect, but smart is as smart does. What the swing state of Wisconsin showed is that this right-wing candidate and other arrogant GOP fanatics are stupid if they think people won't care that, one, Republicans are shutting people out of the voting booth, and two, they're running as ideological autocrats, promising to use state power to outlaw the inherent right of a woman to make her own deeply personal decision about abortion. Moreover, Judge Janet's big win sends a gut-check message to meek Democratic Party officials and donors who continually admonish candidates and local activists to be middle-of-the-roaders, compromising the people's little-d Democratic principles in hopes of winning some Republican votes. Protasiewicz was straight with voters, proudly campaigning to be a pro-choice, pro-worker, pro-democracy justice. This is Jim Hightower saying, because of both the integrity and clarity of her message, she generated a record turnout, greatly increased participation by women and young voters, and, especially noteworthy, made significant inroads in rural and working-class counties that had been considered Trump country. She showed that if Democrats stand up for the people, hello, people will stand up for Democrats.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I guess $787 million settlement made Fox News, I don't know, look inward a little bit. Now, I understand they're still facing another really big lawsuit from Smartmatic and also some shareholders. Yeah, there's going to be a bunch of that. But today I had a little rearranging, if you will. A couple of their hosts were shown the door. Dan Bongino, someone who blocked me on Twitter, Maria Bartiromo, and Janine Pirro, all being shown the door. And I got to wonder how much they're going to try and lay at their feet. But here to share some thoughts on the Fox settlement, maybe where things go, and what the future over at the F Channel is going to be. I've asked Sherry Jacobus to come talk with us. She's a political columnist and former RNC spokeswoman. Sherry.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. At least three people die in tornado-producing storms that rip through Oklahoma. Oklahoma Baptist University President Heath Thomas.
I'm very pleased to report that we had no injuries and we had no casualties. And looking at the state of our campus and the damage the tornado wrought on our campus, that's a significant blessing.
The State Department says one American has died in Sudan amid fighting between rival factions. The Pentagon is preparing for a possible evacuation of U.S. citizens. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
The focus right now is on urging both sides to stop this violence, to abide by a ceasefire, to allow humanitarian aid to get to people that need it.
A gap widened between black and white people who died of a stroke during the pandemic. CBS's Alexander Tin.
CDC says a range of factors could be driving this worsening gap, including the virus itself. Rates of infection were disproportionately higher in black communities, and COVID has been linked to an increased risk of stroke.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
They leave the mic potted up to hear just how bad. And the reality is, no. I've talked to some of my Fox viewing friends, and they don't believe a word of it. Even when you show them, this is it. They don't believe any of it.
I mean, Lordy, there are tapes, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. And a lot of that's just because this has proliferated now for so many years. The Trump problem was not taken care of in the beginning because all of the media were scoring ratings and eyeballs, and they wanted to keep that gravy train going. And then Fox kind of was forced to go all in with that. The others backed off. But, you know, there's a lot of guilt to be spread around why we're in this situation. I mean, Trump lost the presidency, but we are still very much in the era of Trump. And now it's the era of Trump and Fox together.
Yeah.
And Fox was always had a right-wing bias, and there was actually a place for that. But lying and bias are two different things. And you notice on Twitter, when some of the MAGA people and pro-Fox people are out there trying to defend them, they say, oh, but you say, well, Fox lied. And they'll say, oh, but CNN is biased or MSNBC is biased, as if the two things are the same. And they are not. They simply are not the same. I mean, a lie is a lie, no matter who it's coming from. And it's not even remotely the same as bias. But there's a troll or bot farm, or, you know, that is a strategy that they are using on the right to try and conflate the two so that people can say, oh, everybody does it. Well, no, we're talking lies.
They're all corrupt. They all do it. You're right. It's kind of both sidesism, this justification that we've seen, especially on Twitter, since you brought Twitter up. Thoughts on the mark of Musk? Evidently, everybody who had blue check marks like we had, those have all disappeared, except for a few celebrities that evidently Elon's digging into his own pocket to pay.
Well, and he cannot do that. I expect there will be some lawsuits because, like with LeBron, that is insinuating support for the product and for the app and for the business decisions without the permission of the celebrity. It's basically using their likeness and their voice to convey support for something that they don't support. And so they can sue, and I hope they do. So I think they need to. But what's interesting to me is seeing all the people who have their blue check marks now. It's like, oh my God, you paid for it. I like you, though. We're friends. And you know, I feel a little bit weird about that because I feel like it's a bit of a betrayal.
I unfollowed every person who has a blue check mark. Sorry.
Yeah, and some are trying to defend it, saying, well, you know, but it has the edit function. It's like, oh, just delete your tweet and redo it. Or,
exactly.
You know, I mean, like we've all been doing all along. Don't give us that. And so I wonder how many people who think they're a big name who bought their check mark and they're thinking, maybe everybody will think that Elon paid for mine too, that I'm just one of those big names and celebrities. But
nobody's,
I mean,
thinking that.
Donald Trump lost his blue check mark, but if he ever jumped back on Twitter, I bet he'd get it back.
Yeah, no, so, nobody's
but,
thinking
but Elon,
that.
But Elon Musk is ridiculous, and this was a bad business move. I think he's trying to kill Twitter. There's some nefarious plan with this. I think that's become obvious. But these blue check marks, some of them were not deserved, and some people who deserved them didn't get them. But overall, it was a pretty good system because, I mean, Rick, you're creating free content for Elon Musk, for Twitter. We all are the blue check marks, and we get big following, but we are the product. We are the ones that the advertisers are coming to Twitter for, and I don't think that's an overstatement. So I don't understand why Musk would do this, because now it's harder for people to follow us. You know, you look at your mentions at the verified one at the top, and now it's just the people who paid for it. So you can get notifications for people, but I don't want to get notifications for hundreds of people that I like to look at for, you know, read. So it's going to take a while to calibrate this. I'm not sure they can fix it. I think he's got to bring back the blue check mark for the people that helped make Twitter great, and those are the people that created the free content. They weren't paying the blue check marks to create the content. They make their money from us. So I don't get it.
I'm going to be doing a segment every once in a while of really, you know, really important things coming out of people with blue check marks. You know, the folks with six followers who are putting out the best content, as you've pointed out. I think we're going to start doing the top 10 crazy blue check mark comments here very soon. But again, this is, in my view, that check mark meant something. If you were looking at a source, It was one of the filter points that I used and going, you know, this is somebody that I trust or not trust. That's all right. Gone now. And I look at, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, New York City. They said, this is our official account. And then someone with a name close to said, no, we're the official account. And this is going to be an interesting period. But I believe that this was always about destroying Twitter, which had a left bias. And it's the one entity, the one thing that kind of had that left bias. I think it had a lot to do with just destroying that.
I don't think Twitter itself had a left bias. I just think that, it's different than Facebook. Everybody I know from the hometown and, you know, from high school and everything, they're all on Facebook. The people I know from later, from my professional years, are on Twitter. It's just a different crowd. But I do think that, I do think that you have more left-leaning and maybe more intellectual people, and I'm not trying to sound elitist at all, but just people who spend more time gathering information and news and that sort of thing might be, I want to say that people who are left of center maybe are better informed is what I'm saying, but they have to work at it. And so they might be drawn to Twitter for that. Now, remember when Twitter doubled their character numbers? I kind of liked that. At first, that was hard to get used to, but then I kind of liked it. Then they finally got rid of impersonators because I had a real problem with that. Well, Elon Musk has now brought all of that back. There's nothing to stop impersonators from buying. Well, I don't know if they can buy you. You have to get their phone number or whatever, but you know, they can impersonate it. Now, on my Twitter account, before all of this, I literally took a picture of my blue check mark with the drop down that says, this was a verified Twitter. This was a, what were they calling us? A legacy. So So you see on my banner is a picture of that says I'm legacy. So even though I no longer have a blue check mark, the one that I had was not purchased.
Yeah, we've got one as well. And I will never purchase one. So that's simple. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Sherry Jacobus, political columnist, former RNC spokeswoman. I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, as we are siloing off and I see Twitter, what Musk is doing is trying to create more division, even more so with this. I've been watching a lot of these shootings that have been going on lately. And one of the things that keeps coming back to my head is that we're creating this environment of fear. I look at the F channel, I look at right-wing talk radio, and it's all about, you know, our cities are burning, there are MS-13s around every corner, there are criminals everywhere. And I look at, you know, someone getting shot for pulling in the wrong driveway, a kid knocking on a door, a kid rolling a basketball or a soccer ball in another yard. It's gotten us to the point to where, you know, we've made it easier for people to get guns. We've passed laws that make it easier for them to use. And we've scared the hell out of people by getting them to think that, you know, there's crime everywhere when the reality is we're half the crime rate we were in the 70s. Do you have any hope for the future in the world that we're in? Because all I'm seeing is chaos and anger and fear being spewed and nobody allowed to talk to each other anymore.
Well, and the NRA at the conventions and everything, they're getting even bolder with the propaganda. You have to destroy the NRA. You have to beat them. You have to basically have a very focused campaign, much like we've done in the past, but just more of it and better to really demonize those people who are a little bit too pro-gun in Congress. It's not cute. It's not funny. It's deadly because you are scaring these people and on Fox and talk radio, they gin them up and these old guys with their guns and they make them particularly afraid of people of color. You know, those are the ones that they're going to shoot. And then you've got these sort of gamer types, incel, white supremacist MAGA types who are openly talking about this sort of thing. And they, you know, the leaker, what's his name? The 21-year-old who leaked our, who had our, you know, our nation's secrets and stole the documents. You know, he's with the group where they openly advocate this stuff. They're anti-black. They love their guns. The guns, God, and, you know, these white supremacists. And it's not this fringe stuff that it was just a few short years ago. This is becoming more and more mainstream. And it's growing, and it's not just these little isolated incidents anymore. You know, you hear this type of language with people. I mean, I'm a former Republican, but I was never that kind of Republican. I left the party the day after they nominated Trump. And I paid a huge price for that, for fighting Trump. But I was an RNC spokesperson. I worked on Capitol Hill for Republicans, you know, moderate ones. And I was on TV a few thousand times, and I was spent a lot of time at Fox. But I've never seen anything like this. So people to say, oh, well, maybe the seeds were planted in right-wing radio. I think that is where it started. But even Ronald Reagan wasn't this. And I know Democrats like to you know, slam him and say the party's always been this. But I think it's really important, particularly if Democrats want to co-op former Republicans, independents, people who are simply not MAGA, and it you make them, you know, Biden Republicans or whatever. You know, Reagan did this. He co-opted so-called Reagan Democrats and kept them for the party for a generation. And I think there's a real opportunity for Democrats to do that now in this era of Trump. But not if you're going to constantly slam people who used to be Republicans and say, but the party has always been that way, and or Fox has always been that way. It wasn't.
No, there's always been a wing.
A lot of things.
Right. There's always been that wing, that wink and nod to that part of the party. You know, they've always had a little bit of that. I've never said it's been the whole party, but now that little bit has really taken over.
Yeah. It's a cancer. It's completely taken over. And I remember, you know, I worked in leadership, and I worked on one of the committees after the Republicans took over in the mid-90s. So I was in Newt's office, you know, for meetings several times a week. And I'd been in meetings with Ginny Thomas because she was working for Dick Armey, and he was the Republican leader. And you know, we became friendly a little bit, but she was so beleaguered and, oh, the press, they're always after me, and kind of felt bad for her and everything. But I didn't understand two things. I didn't understand why we now needed a representative of these outside right-wing groups at the table at our senior leadership meetings, staff meetings. It just didn't seem appropriate because it was so blatantly political and plus a little weird. We always knew they were off to the side. Like when I first started out in politics, it's like just it's fringe and then a little bit too much. But I didn't understand why she was putting herself out there working. I mean, she was a Supreme Court justice's wife, and she's working as a staffer in the new Republican leadership, the new Republican majority, you know, contract with America and all that. I mean, I felt like she was rubbing their noses in it and then kind of complaining, oh, woe is me, they're always after me. But I just why are you doing this, you know? So, you know, the whole thing, you know, it just was a little crazy. But, man, I used to work for Bob Michael. You know that name, right?
Yeah, wow.
He's about, oh my God, he'd be a left-wing Democrat right now for what
that's how far the goalposts have gone.
My father always said, we're Bob Michael, you know, Howard Baker Republicans, and that would be very, very rhino, but it was sensible, you know? So it was natural for me to gravitate towards John McCain when he ran for president. I mean, in 1999, I was pulled into the late night burgers and beer meetings, you know, and that crappy little headquarters they had in Old Town Alexandria. That building's torn down now, but you know, that was such a great scrappy campaign. You're not going to see that with this party. And here's another thing. It started out, it was Trump, because the establishment Republican Party was not with Trump. Once he got the nomination, because media basically gave it to him and Putin, they all jumped on board, but they weren't, the establishment party in DC was not with him. He was forced on them in a way. But so much time has gone by because, you know, Merrick Garland dragged his feet and Mueller didn't do his job. And Democrats decided not to impeach Trump that very first time over the Mueller report. And they should have. And I think he was emboldened after that. He knew where the line was drawn because they did it. So, you know, they caved so early. So over the course of a couple of election cycles, we now have a lot of true nutsoid MAGA Trump Republicans in elected positions that weren't there before. Before, they all had to kind of hold their nose and follow Trump. It's like now these people are in office,
and now they're worse. And it's filtering down. The problem is it's not just the handful, the you know, the Kook caucus or the Q caucus. It's now filtering down to local school boards, and it's getting worse. And the concern is that the Republican Party is never what it was and could never be salvaged. So I guess I know I said last question, but this now comes up. Is there any hope?
For the party?
Yeah. Is there any hope for the Republican Party?
God,
is there
no,
any-
I, I wrote a few things about this, and or someone did a feature interview with me, and I said, no, the party is dead, and people hanging on to it. I don't know why. I mean, you know, my old friend Larry Hogan seemed like he had one foot out the door, but he's still a Republican. Michael Steele is still Republican. He told me just the other day we were emailing. He says, I refuse. He goes, I paid my dues. I'm not going to leave because, you know, he was the party leader. He doesn't want to give them the satisfaction. But at some point, I mean, he's obviously really not a Republican anymore, but he hasn't officially left the party. But I don't see why some people are still hanging in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't obvious. Know what a Republican just, is anymore. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I used
now,
to know.
If they're gonna, well, if they could be some kind of a spoiler in a primary, you know, I was hoping that Liz Cheney would run. I mean, I didn't want her elected, but I wanted her to run as a Republican and have Larry Hogan as a running mate, you know, announce a running mate real early and run just so they can maybe get on a debate stage and just make sure that was a way to reach Republican voters to tell them about the Trump crimes and serve as some kind of a spoiler just to get the information out there. Not run as an independent, but actually in the Republican primary for the sole purpose of making sure that that Trump didn't get a free ride. And, you know, I think DeSantis is afraid to lay a filled glove on him.
Yeah, no, but my mind is going, you know, the only hope we have as a country is a Cheney. Oh, how things have changed.
If that's what it takes to get Republican voters to know the truth about Trump. But I think if the Republicans don't want to save their party, if they still want to stay in there. I left and I didn't think Trump was going to win. I mean, this was after the nomination and I thought he was going to lose. We all did. All I knew is the fact that these people are able to go along with this. I never want to sit at a table with them in meetings and projects and I can't work with them again because this was just so not okay. And I was suing him for defamation at the time and I had been hacked and, you know, the whole nine yards. Cause I spoke truth to power told the truth about that super PAC he had that he lied about. And I wasn't the source for the story, but I confirmed it after the fact. So I knew, you know, what he was and the party was in my mind dead at that time. But the few that are left, what they should do is if they really want to save the party, write off 2024 completely. You know, make sure Biden or Trump, no Republican, no DeSantis, no Trump wins, except the fact that it's going to be a President Biden, and get rid of these nuts. Try and pull them out by the roots. But that does mean kind of almost forfeiting the next cycle or two. Yeah.
No, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because I don't see that playing out. But
no. A lot of this is wishful thinking. I mean, if I were in charge of strategy to save the Republican Party, these are the things I would do. But, yeah. Make that presentation.
Yeah.
There could be big donors. There could be some big donors that are just going to say, you know, enough.
Yeah, we're going to sit this one out. But Sherry, I appreciate you sharing some of your expertise and your insight. Always great talking with you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good stuff. Sherry Jacobus, former RNC spokesperson. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you've got any questions, comments, something in your mind, definitely want to hear it. This is, you know, again, one of these moments where, you know, I love talking with people like Sherry because, look, you know, the reality is this isn't your grandfather's Republican Party. This isn't the Eisenhower Republican Party. This isn't the Reagan Party. And look, you know, I have a lot of problems with the Reagan era. Most of it is on the financial side and the, you know, the busting of unions and, you know, rigging our tax code for the very wealthy. Never put him into the MAGA category. Never put him into the really outrageous, crazy kind of white supremacist category. We're in a scary moment. And when you have former Republicans coming out and saying, look, this isn't my party. This isn't the party of 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Someone should listen. But she is right. There is no balance in the media airwaves. I know the right loves to cry and complain about some liberal media that's out there. When the reality is right-wing talk radio dominates. The F channel dominates cable news. And there really isn't. There isn't a left in media. Sorry, not happening. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you will find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.